And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Sunday early evening here in the DMV. A little less lovely today than it was the last couple of days, but hopefully everybody got out to enjoy some of the weather or do what you want to do, because this week, if you're into the draft, it is going to be nonstop busy. It's, the first round doesn't start until Thursday night, but we know how this is going to work. There's going to be some news, some information, some thoughts, or even if you just want to sit down like I do your own mock draft, read everything you can. There's going to be a lot going on, and not just with Commanders, the whole NFL draft. And so for this episode, I decided to take like a little bit of a break from just obsessively discussing May or Daniels or McCarthy and broaden that a bit. But we did talk plenty about that as well with my guy, Tim Murray, one of the hosts for the VEASAN network. He hosts a show with, still does, with former NFL quarterback Sean King, 6 to 9 on VEASAN. Tim's a DC guy. We've had him on before. He's moved out to the desert, and he spends a lot of his time thinking about the NFL draft, not just in terms of like what makes sense from a team, should the team draft this player or that position, but more of, hey, 4.5 quarterbacks, first round is the line. Which way are you going? Are you taking Bo Nix to get picked? And then obviously, there's been a lot of discussion this week about the line with Jaden Daniels and Drake May and some movement there affected by some of the noise that's been going on here the last few days. So we talked broad. We talked about that, about Daniels and May through that prism, as well as pretty much the whole first round. We didn't go pick by pick, but just discussing a lot of the first round. So fun conversation with Tim. You can find him on Twitter at @1TimMurray. So we'll get to that in a moment here on the podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Of course, if you want, like, hey, I've been need to catch up, Ben, what have I missed? Well, you've missed a bit. We've had some really, really good guests, I would say, over the last, this whole draft cycle. But the last, couple weeks, we had on Adam Schefter recently, along with Chris Sims from NBC Sports. Chris, of course, breaks down the draft. Adam talked about what could happen at number 2. Greg Cosell from NFL Films joined me. And then the previous episode on Friday, I did a live mock draft first round with Evan Silva from Establish the Run and Danny Heifetz from The Ringer. So if you wanted a mock draft experience, go check that out. We alternated picks throughout and explained what we're thinking along the way. So do all that. And as far as on the Athletic website itself, needless to say, I've had a lot of different stories up throughout this process, mostly about the quarterbacks for sure. Last week, though, I did a mock draft exercise 6 different ways, as well as breaking down what Adam Peters and Lance Newmark said at their press conference last week. Tomorrow, meaning Monday, I'll have a final Commanders-only mock draft, all 7 rounds. I'm not promising it's my final one because I have this platform and I have social media, but in terms of the website, it is going to be there. You can check that out on Monday. All right. I guess let's go through a couple of notes here. It's not really notes, but just things I think, when you borrow the Peter King line, some things that I think, with regards to the quarterback situation, I talked a little bit about this with Tim as well, that, I feel like we're starting to reach a point that I felt during the coaching search situation, where it's one thing to say Ben Johnson's the favorite. It's another thing to say he might be the strong favorite. It's another thing to say these are the reasons as to why. But as I was saying then,
it feels like we're just playing a game of telephone or something, or repeating rumors as opposed to repeating reports. And it's getting that way here, in that more I see, the more I see people, when they're doing their mock drafts, putting Jaden Daniels at 2, but admitting it's not based on anything real. It's based on some of the noise. And you know what Tim and I discussed was how the betting markets moved very heavily in Daniels' favor a week or so ago. But then last week, after some comments that Schefter made, after Daniels' agent on Twitter put up a thinking emoji on top of, I think it was a Mike Florio video, where Florio was questioning why the Commanders brought 4 quarterbacks in last week together, has, I think, affected the market the other way. I'm hesitant to say almost anything, because not that I'm going to move the market, but just I don't want anything to get misconstrued. I've had Daniels, as you know, I'm sure I've repeated this many times, as number 2 going back since early March in my various mocks. And I, you know, unless I change my mind in the next few hours, good chance I'm going to leave it there too. But we'll see. You'll have to tune in tomorrow, check out the website. But it is still this, like, I still don't know exactly what Adam Peters thinks. And the case is pretty compelling for Drake May. It's not like it's, you know, this would be some weird choice. He's, you know, if you were going to make a movie and you needed a young quarterback coming out of college, like, say it's we're remaking Jerry Maguire, right? Instead of the Cush character by Jerry O'Connell, now it's a character and his name is Drake May. You can't do much better than that as a name for a young rising quarterback. And Drake May looks like he's at a central casting, 6'4", good build. You know, he's got the Southern twang a little bit there. Like he checks off so many boxes, and I'm not even discussing the big arm that makes, you know, huge plays down the field, the ability to run and make plays with his legs. Now, of course, we've gotten caught up a lot in what's wrong with Drake May, the footwork, the mechanics, missing some of the easy throws. How much of that is on him? How much of that is on the fact that North Carolina, you know, changed offensive coordinators before his last season, that they, you know, he lost key talent around him on offense? All factors. But, you know, we've had Randy Mueller on here. We've had other people on here who, you know, there are people who do like Drake May, but they like him. There's the variance between the like and the questioning spreads out further than what we get typically with Jaden Daniels, who's got a lot of upside, as does May, who had an unbelievably spectacular season last year. You know, he's got the dual threat ability. He can stress defenses on every single play, even just this weekend. And just talking to a couple of people with teams, and I was like, hey, you know, I get your opinion. What's your, well, you know, give me, what's the other, you know, what's the real opinion? What's the consensus opinion at your place? And generally everybody kept saying Daniels. Now, these are not teams that are picking, so, but the, you know, but just in general, like, and you know, and I did that poll a few weeks ago where Daniels finished second to Caleb Williams, but a good chunk ahead of May and McCarthy, who, by the way, if I say I'm not ruling out McCarthy, I'm not saying that I like suggesting Washington would take him, but I'm saying I get the case. If they do, I kind of like McCarthy. Every time I've seen him talk, I kind of like his vibe. Kind of a laid-back vibe, but clearly he's got, I don't want to say he's a winner because Michigan went 27-1. I think we had Greg Cosell on a week or so ago, and he was like, that talk is so silly. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, because somebody's a winner. Like, what does that mean? But there is a presence to these guys, right? There is something to be said for who's leading the room, who's leading the offense. I think McCarthy's got that, along with the fact that even, yes, there were games where Michigan did not utilize him much, but when needed, he stepped up and was able to make the plays. And, you know, we talked about, Tim and I talked about Joe Alt, the tackle. Should he be picked 7th? Would he be worthy of being picked 5 if the Chargers stay put? And I didn't say this in that part, but part of my concern with a guy like Alt is at no stage are we hearing anybody suggest he should really be moving up. We're only really saying five because of some notion that Jim Harbaugh really wants to emphasize, you know, sort of a toughness with his team, and taking an offensive lineman would kind of do that right out of the gate, even though the Chargers, as we know, desperately need receivers. But, you know, you can get receivers in the second round. It's going to be harder to get tackles, et cetera. But the fact that we're not it's not really like people aren't saying, well, Alt's got to go to this top five. He's that good. Well, I bring this up to say, part of me wonders, is the reason why the Daniels and May are constantly the only topics we have basically at the two and the three picks for the most part with a little McCarthy is because there's not a ton else to consider. As good as Marvin Harrison is, even in most years, even if a team like Washington didn't need a quarterback, you know, taking a receiver at two is it's kind of a dicey spot. Again, I get it. He may be great and receivers do great, but it's not really the way you want to build a team typically. There were a lot of questions about Herbert and Tua coming out. Now, obviously in 2020, when Washington went with Chase Young, obviously they did fine for the most part. And maybe that's all this is here. Maybe these guys will be fine at a minimum for the most part, but you know, the concerns for each, it's hard for me to ignore them when I'm hearing from people who are describing these prospects with Daniels. You know, some of the, you know, the weight situation, is he going to be able to protect himself running with the football? You know, even kind of this latest kerfuffle, I think it's largely nothing, but does it say something about him? Does the fact that the Commanders brought all these quarterbacks together, somebody described it as an alpha test. And now, not that we've heard from Daniels per se, but we've heard from the agent, we heard Adam Schefter say, you know, out loud the other day that Daniels maybe want to play for somebody else. We already knew he likely wanted to play for the Raiders because their head coach, Antonio Pierce, was one of his coaches in college, and Pierce recruited him in college. That could be a very nice, sweet thing that's not a negative on the Commanders at all. But did Washington learn something about him and his demeanor or anything along those lines when they brought these guys in? Good question. I don't know the answer. So I guess what I'm saying is that I still feel like we're still a ways away from having a really good feel for any of this, even though we're less than 4 days away basically at this point. So it's very odd. I'm not going to lie. It's confusing. And, you know, I do wonder we'll see what happens going forward, but I do wonder if we're getting closer to the Ben Johnson situation in which everybody is perceiving something to happen, i.e. Jaden Daniels, and what is that based on? Is it based on anything real, or is it just based on speculation? Is it based on things like Dan Quinn pausing for a while when he said Jaden Daniels' name to the sports junkies, or not his name, but like, you know, called him, I think, a playmaker when asked to describe him in one word? Or, you know, what are the fact that some paparazzi had a picture saying Dan Quinn picked Jaden Daniels up at the airport the other day, and he was the only one they did that for. Is that real? Is that a thing? I don't know. It's interesting, right? Everything is interesting. It doesn't mean everything matters. And that's what we're all still trying to figure out. So Tim and I talk about that some more. But like I said, we talk mostly about NFL draft stuff, not just simply the number two. But I did just want to at least mention that. For this week, obviously the draft is on Thursday, followed by day two Friday, day three Saturday, obviously. So I'll be in Ashburn covering each day there. In addition, I will be, I don't know that I'll do a podcast every day. We'll see. I presume I will do one after the first round, but Friday night to be determined, but they got five picks, right? Kind of feels like I need to. So don't worry, we'll have podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. Keep an eye out for them here. Obviously, if you follow me on Twitter/X, you'll get it there at Ben Standig. And you will find me here as well on the Standig Room Only podcast. A couple other quick things I'll just say. I've been saying over and over again that it gets very weak with the offensive tackles at the end of round one into round two. And that's why the idea of trading up has become so popular. Tim and I talk about this notion a little bit later. But one name to keep an eye on, I would say, Roger Rosengarten, the offensive tackle from Washington. I don't mean necessarily for Washington, though he did do a 30 visit here. But, you know, he's a guy that gets more, like Dan Brugler has him, I think, number 67 prospect. He's typically not been anywhere close in the first round in any of these mock drafts. But as I've looked at recently here in the last few days, I'm seeing him more mentioned in the 40s. Now, that's partly because tackles are going to get pushed up because there's so few after the top. Several go in the first round. But, you know, I think it was Mel Kiper said the other day or wrote the other day that, you know, if Rosengarten stayed in school one more year, he might have been a first-round pick next year. And he played right tackle this past two seasons, but that's because Michael Penix became the quarterback there, and he's a lefty, so they moved Rosengarten to his blind side. He had been a left tackle before. I say all this to note that, like, if Washington stays put at 36 or makes a tackle, looks to make a tackle pick at 40, I think that's a name I would keep an eye on. I think Patrick Paul is interesting, but he didn't come in for a 30 visit, and he may be a little bit further down the road in terms of being able to help you. So those are two guys, I think, at tackle, particularly Rosengarten, are the two guys that I'm thinking about at the top of the second. I don't know that Jordan Morgan's going to make it. Otherwise, I would discuss him as well. Of course, we don't know if they think of him as a tackle or a guard. So there is that as well. But that's, I think, for me, like, I'm sort of settling in on these with these mock drafts and these final thoughts that if they stay put, that's a guy I'm intrigued by for them at that range, somebody who can maybe come in and play quickly and gives you versatility, possibly play either side, depending on what you want to do. I don't mean that he would play right tackle and sit Andrew Wiley. I just mean, you know, you could do a few different things. He could conceivably play either way. Obviously, that's a good position of flexibility. I said that for you guys on purpose. All right, so that's that. So again, go check out my story tomorrow on The Athletic Monday about my final mock draft. I go through a lot of scenarios there, what I'm thinking with each pick as best I can, as well as the players there. All right, let's get to it now. My conversation with our guy Tim Murray does great work for VSiN Sports out in Vegas. He knows the numbers, the lines, the odds for these various players and spots, and we go through a bunch of those, Commanders and around the first round and more. Let's do that right now here on the Standing Room Only podcast. All right, I'd like to think that we've really kind of tackled this number two pick, as well as the whole NFL draft, from all angles possible. But there is one that I've neglected a little bit, and that is hearing from somebody out in the desert where they talk about things like the odds and the lines, and they bet on what's going to happen in this draft, and they look at it from that perspective. So who better to get than my guy on VSiN Live, primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. East Coast time, Tim effin' Murray. What's going on, man?
Ben, what's up, brother? You're the mock draft guru, man. Huddle Report champion of the world. But, you know, it's fun. We'll talk about the odds. And I think, I would imagine your listeners, for the most part, don't fully understand, and I don't think a lot of people do, just why the market moves so much. I'll try to help out and in that, but yeah, it's wild, man, and it's funny. You know, I put a clip out there on my Twitter feed, Ben. Last week we had the owner of Circa and Circa Sports in studio, Derek Stevens, and I think people don't believe me sometime when I say that sportsbooks hate the NFL draft, and he just flat out said, "Oh, it's awful. We lose all the time." So it's a fun event to bet. I like betting it. You know, I've always loved the NFL draft, and now that you incorporate betting into it, it's like putting together a puzzle, even though I don't like puzzles.
I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, I don't gamble the way I did, when I was younger and much dumber. But smart, you know, if you could have bet on the NFL draft back then, assuming that, like, the percentage of wins would have mirrored the percentage of wins and losses for the normal stuff, I'd have been, I don't know where the box I would be sleeping in would be, but I'd be in a box. I mean, like a cardboard one, not the one that's 6 feet under. Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And look, obviously it's come up. I mean, it comes up a lot, but, you know, specifically for this team, it has come up a lot this week. You've been messaging me, hey, man, look at the odds. They're moving in this direction or that direction. It's become part of the conversation that we're having. Does this mean anything regarding what the Commanders will do it to? So I do think it's a good way to get into it. Plus, like you messaged me earlier, we talk sometimes about just whatever, and that, hey, you're working on your own mock draft. So we said, all right, let's just talk through it, and we'll do it here, because I know for me, the way I like to think, it's through talking. It's not through quiet contemplation. It's definitely not through texting. So, so that's what we're going to kind of do here. But I guess let's just start with this, to start at the top with the Drake May, Jane Daniels stuff, because it is interesting to an extent. The lines have been moving. I guess just tell us where they've been moving and what do you think it means, you know, with what's happening.
Oh, and these odds move so fast and rapidly. So we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, around 5 o'clock your time. And as we sit, the market's kind of steady. DraftKings, Circa, MGM, all are around Jaden Daniels -150 in that ballpark to be selected by the Commanders at number two, or if there's a matchup market, that's the way we're kind of looking. And on, when was it? I think it was Friday or Saturday, so about 6 days ago, we got as high as -350 that Jaden Daniels would be headed to Washington. I think a lot of that had to do with Adam Schefter going on the podcast that he went on. I apologize to those guys. I don't know the name of the podcast.
You know who you should apologize to? Well, not you.
You.
He should apologize to me. He went on my podcast 2 days earlier, and it was a reasonable. I mean, I was like, oh, pretty cool. I got Adam Schefter on. Pretty reasonable conversation. You know, this is the problem when, like, I'm trying to think reasonable. He's like, look, I think Jaden Daniels. I'm looking at the tea leaves. I'm not hearing this from the team. I think right. Jaden Daniels, but hey, we'll see. He doesn't say at the end of it, but you can go buy your Jaden Daniels jersey now. Because of course I didn't bring it up. Well, I'm not buying a Jaden Daniels jersey. Anyway, yes.
But when you go back and listen to it, he didn't say I'm reporting. It was almost like he kind of got caught up in the moment. Like, this is what I'm hearing. And this is kind of what we've been hearing the whole time, and you're living it every single day. And John Kime mentioned it on his podcast too, and Daniel Jeremiah mentioned it when he, you know, did his media rounds. And I know our friend Scott Abraham put out the tweet of the video. Nobody knows what Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are thinking, and I think that's why we've come back to this point. It's not inside information, folks. The Vegas and odds makers, they don't know right now. And, you know, last year there was a moment in time where Will Levis became a massive favorite to be the number two overall pick based off of like a Reddit post. And he ended up going in the second round. So I think what we're doing right now, Ben, is this is where the market probably should be. Jaden Daniels should be the favorite, but I don't think he should be a massive favorite. And I think the reporting that you've done and others have done from sources around the league saying we believe it will be Jaden Daniels, whether it's because they hired Cliff Kingsbury or this is the type of quarterback that they would ultimately get. I thought it was interesting. I had Jay Gruden on my show on Friday, and I said, who would you take? And he said, if I had all the time in the world, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, if I had all the time in the world, I would take Drake May. He felt like there was more upside there, but then he kind of came to the conclusion talking it out that he would pick Jaden Daniels. So, and I think lastly, just to kind of sum it up, when it comes to betting the draft, it really doesn't matter what you think. I could think that Michael Penix is better than all of these guys. It does not matter. It's all about information that you gather. And that's why, Ben, you've done a great job at mock drafts over the years because you're a great reporter and you found, you know, nuggets of information. So I think this big movement in the market, nobody knows. And I think that's the interesting thing, that you have to kind of come back to the fact that nobody knows the answer. And I think what we saw this week was people better saying, well, if no one knows the answer, I'm going to take a shot at +250, +200 and move this market down, because this shouldn't be a situation where it's, you know, 30% implied probability. So I'll give you a quick example from a betting standpoint. So about 2 weeks ago, Ben, I bet under 4.5 quarterbacks in the first round at +260. So +260, for those new to betting, You put $10 down, you win 26 if the bet comes home. And that's an implied probability of 27%. And the way I kind of came to it was I thought, is there a 27% chance or better than 27% chance that only four quarterbacks go in the first round? I thought so. So that's why I took a bet, took a slice at that particular odds. So that's why I think the market has moved back. It's not because there's inside information. And I think this is probably where it stays until some information maybe gets leaked out of Fort Knox, AKA Ashburn right now.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point to make, like, cause I see people run rampant with this stuff all the time. And it goes to show amount of lack of critical thinking that exists. And that is, like, you just explained it well, like, it's not insider information that's moving the lines. It's things like Adam Schefter saying something, or you mentioned that last year, a Reddit post.
Yeah,
it may have done that, whatever it may be. But people are like, oh, the odds makers think that this is happening. No, that's not what's happening. They are adjusting a line based on essentially what it is going to take to get half the money over there and half the money over here. And go ahead.
I was going to give you an example. So, and I'm not tooting my own horn, and I don't know if I was the guy that did it.
No, toot away.
Let me just state, I am not a sharp bettor. When I bet a Commanders game on a Sunday, I don't move lines. That's not who I am. I'm not a respected bettor. But this market, the draft market, moves so quickly that one little, information put out there kind of shifts it. And on my show, I bet Tarian Arnold to be the number one DB selected. Once again, kind of a similar situation I talked about with the quarterbacks, where it was plus 185. And I felt like, Ben, you know, based off of what I had read and you know, as you poke around, I thought it was closer to a 50-50 proposition, whether it be Quinyon Mitchell or Tarian Arnold. So that's why I took the bet. And the market moved about 60 cents. That's what the draft betting market is. It moves so quickly. These numbers move rapidly. So, you know, it's not like a basketball game where you see sharp action and the line moves one way or the other, or a football game, right? I mean, a line move in football without an injury of 2 points is a massive move. In the NFL draft betting market, I mean, things move wildly fast because the books are trying to keep up, right? The books are on the same playing field as we are. And that's why they hate the draft. And that's why I love the draft, because I feel like we have an even playing field.
I will say that, you know, you're describing this to me, that the market pulled back after the Schefter information. We presume that's what it was that led to the change. And obviously there was also some kerfuffle going on over the last few days with the outing here with all the quarterbacks there, and the agent for Jaden Daniels putting a thinking emoji out there that everybody wants to read into, and who knows what. But, you know, as all this has been happening, I've been on the Jaden Daniels at two for a while for the purposes of my mock drafts and something. And I hadn't moved it at all and still haven't. But it's similar to the coaching search in that it's not based on anything. Like Schefter himself was saying, it's not like he's hearing it from them. It's just taking the information and trying to figure out what makes the most sense, understanding all aspects involved. And when this happened in the coaching search, people didn't understand that when the Ben Johnson noise kept going and going and going, it wasn't based on anything. It was just based on, well, kind of there was nothing. So the rumor was out there was him. It's reasonable to think it could be him. The young, hot offensive coach knew everything coming up here. Okay, all that stuff. But it wasn't based on anything. And then people got really angry at the end when it wasn't him. I don't think that was Washington's fault, but it wasn't him. And I'm starting to think, oh man, are we about to have the same thing happen here? More and more people are saying Jaden Daniels, but I don't know what they're basing it on. I cover this every day. I have been talking to as many people as I possibly can. I'm just going off of what I see. It's not like in other years where, like, yeah, you know, you feel pretty good about this happening or that happening. Now, this has happened in recent years. You mentioned the CJ Stroud thing last year, or maybe we're talking about that off air, but you mentioned CJ Stroud.
Yep.
And how, you know, look, when the whole process started, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud 1-2 in some order. And then the whole S2 test came out. Apparently this is CJ Stroud's scores were not good. I, from subsequently as a side note from what I heard, was like he just wasn't engaged in it, as opposed to he just didn't care about it, as opposed to so he might have been doing what I did back in some class when I didn't know the answer, just go ABC, ABC, ABC on the Scantron. And then, of course, a few years before that, we had in 2021, we had the Niners trade up to 3. It's going to be Mac Jones because Chris Sims goes on, I guess, his PFT and said, oh, well, I think it's going to be Chris Sims. Everyone's like, oh, well, I'm sorry, it's going to be Mac Jones. Well, Chris Sims and Kyle Shanahan, they're like besties. Guess that's right. The answer. Must be. And then, of course, it's not. So this isn't the first time this has happened. It is the first time it's impacting me, my personal life. So that's where I'm kind of getting at. But, like, do you see this as being abnormal based on other drafts you've dealt with? Or is this just sort of, you know, the norm and it's maybe affecting us more here in D.C. because we're dealing with the second pick?
No, I think it's the norm now. And I think, you know, because it's a quarterback and – you know, people are trying to get the information and we have so many insiders out there. It's funny because I had a whole big segment planned on my show on Thursday to break down different clips and say, look, no one knows, you know, everybody out of, you know, I pointed out in Dane Brugler's article or mock draft this past week that he was like, I think it's Jaden Daniels, but nothing's coming out of Washington. You've reiterated that. John Kimes reiterated that. Daniel Jeremiah said that. So that's why I thought the movement in the market was wild. But that's where we are. And, you know, there was an odds move this week with Brock Bowers to go number 10. Why? Because Peter Schrager from the NFL Network has had a really good track record of nailing the Jets selection at number 10. And you try to, as a bettor, you try to connect these tea leaves, you know, Lance Zierlein, for instance. And that's why, and I'm not blaming Lance, but that's why I got into trouble last year because he, on one of his final mock drafts, he did it on his radio show in Houston. He said it wasn't going to be CJ Stroud at 2. That was the information he had gathered. Over the years, he has done a very good job of knowing what Houston is going to do. And ultimately, it was CJ Stroud, obviously, at number 2. So, you know, I think now that there's so many insiders, the draft has become such a massive event. Obviously, it's on prime time now. The fact that this is a quarterback, that's why it's so polarizing and fascinating. And, you know, we talk about this on my show a lot, Ben, you know, when it comes to how many quarterbacks are going to go in the first round this year, I'm kind of pushing back on, you know, could Penix get in the first round? Of course he could. You know, I really don't believe Knicks will, but because there are quarterback needy teams at 11, 12, and 13, Minnesota, Denver, and Las Vegas, it's easy for the punditry on television to talk about quarterbacks, Ben, because we know those guys. We have a lot of film on those guys, and it's more fun to talk about than talking about, you know, Joe Alt or, you know, Byron Murphy, you know, these guys up front. So I think this is becoming the norm, and that's where you do have to get a little careful with, you know, racing to place a bet on, you know, on Adam Schefter, say, go get your jerseys, but you have to go and listen to it and say, did he say I'm reporting this? Or was it more of like, did he get caught up in the moment as being on a, you know, Washington podcast and saying, yeah, I think this is it.
Yeah, for sure. No, there's a lot to that. I mean, I point it out all the time to people. Like, here's a little cheat sheet. I can't remember if I've said this here before or not. Number one, do they say sources said? If they don't, then they are just speculating. Which, to Schefter's credit, he didn't say sources. He said,
I'm hearing, right? And like,
and that is not the same thing. That is a very different line. We all deal with it, you know, who are in this game, but it's a very different deal than saying sources said. And by the way, just to be clear, depending on who the person is, source might be garbage anyway. I mean, you know, if it's not a, you know, from a credible outlet or somebody who's been proven to be in the know before, just saying sources said does not mean actually know anything.
Well, and I want to jump in too, because, you know, we're doing all this discussion, you know, we're kind of doing an exercise out loud here on your podcast, but Jaden Daniels still could be the pick. Like, I think that's the thing I've always said on my show from a betting standpoint, and I'm sure you're believing it too, is like, absolutely, Jaden Daniels come Thursday night could be the second selection of the draft and go to Washington. But I think the reason we saw the market move, and it's kind of reverting back to now, just remember back in February, Jaden Daniels was not the favorite to go to. It was Drake May. That was based off of everything that we, you know, draft prognosticators and everyone who evaluated players kind of had believed that he was the second best quarterback. And then Daniels have a record setting year, wins the Heisman Trophy, looks the part, you know, Washington makes the tweaks that they do with their coaching staff. And then he slowly becomes the favorite. So I'm not sitting here saying that Jaden Daniels is not going to be the guy. I just think, I don't know. And, you know, I've made a lot of bets so far in this NFL draft market, and not one of them is on what Washington will do at two, because you guys, to your credit, have said all along, they're not saying anything out of Ashburn.
Yeah, no, trust me. It's incredibly annoying that, like, and again, it's not, just to be clear, it's not like Ron Rivera was running around telling us before we're taking Jahan Dotson. I just mean, like, at least you had a feel for, like, okay, well, like, there's some sense of, like, this is happening or that's happening, or like other people around the league would hear stuff that, you know, again, like with anything else, you have to listen to the, you know, you have to know your sources. You have to, you know, have good instincts. You know, you kindly pointed out my success in the draft contest. The first two times I won it, the first time I won it, I wasn't doing any of this. I was just a rando writing for FF Toolbox. Couldn't, you know, didn't have a source to save my life. And then when I won it the second time, I was at NBC Sports Washington, but I was like covering the Wizards. Like I wasn't like covering the league. So then I won again, or some version of that. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's about instincts, but yeah, it is very confusing. And I honestly think the fact that the Commanders are doing this the way they think they need to do it, not talking, is actually leading to these problems, because since there is no information that anybody feels comfortable saying, it's like, well, okay, if I don't know and you don't know and Schefter doesn't know, well, the world goes on. People are making bets. People are doing podcasts and writing blogs, and they got to say something. So they got to go say what they have to say based off of what's there.
Well, and it's kind of like, I mean, and Adam Peters was a part of the decision when they went up to number three, and forever and a day, we thought, oh, it's going to be Mac Jones. It's, you know, that's Kyle Shanahan's Kirk Cousins, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe it was going to be Mac Jones, but then there was like, I don't know what ultimately led to the decision to go with Trey Lance, but I think there was just so much speculation for that pick. And now I feel like Adam Peters is in it again, and he's, whether he's trying to learn from his mistakes or not, you know, that's kind of the interesting discussion here. And I mean, If I had to guess right now, I think it's Jaden Daniels, but, you know, I don't know. And that's why I wouldn't say, hey, go lay -150 on Jaden Daniels being the second pick, because I don't know.
Yeah. Now, and by the way, like, not to give Peters or the 49ers any kind of pass, but that was the COVID year, 2021. They didn't have these guys to work out. And Trey Lance, he'd only played like one game in like 18 months or whatever it was. Yeah. They didn't have a chance to talk to him or meet with him in the same way you would normally, and whatever. Anyway, we don't have to go back to that. But yes, it's interesting how this is becoming more and more of a trend. And fortunately, we only have a few more days to go before this one is over one way or the other. That said, you're doing your mock draft. You're working some things out in your head. Maybe you'll even throw in another wager or two. You wanted to talk some things out. So let's do it. Where are we starting here? I'm assuming we're good at one.
Yep, we're good at one.
So now what?
Yeah, we're good at one. Obviously, two is a curveball. You want to get it right, but we've kind of discussed that ad nauseum. And then, obviously, you got to think about the trade situation. You know, I have some skepticisms on, you know, is Arizona going to make that pick? Are the Chargers definitely going to trade out? Is Minnesota just saying, hey, maybe one of these guys will fall to us? So I think that's kind of the fascinating discussion. You got Peter Schrager's mock draft and him talking about how people reached out to him regarding the Giants. But the interesting one to me, there's a lot of things that are interesting. You know, could Joe Alt go five? I think that's a possibility, the tackle out of Notre Dame. I also think the Chargers could trade out and, you know, Minnesota takes J.J. McCarthy there. But the one that I am trying to figure out now, to get real kind of nerdy, is who's going to be the first defensive player selected? Because, Ben, I don't know how you do it when you do your mock drafts, but we kind of get into this, you know, from the mock drafters that are out there that people kind of respect, we get into this kind of groupthink process where it's like, okay, Joe Alt's definitely going to go to the Titans at 7, and then Dallas Turner's going to go to the Falcons at 8. And I'm like, are we so sure that Atlanta's definitely going with Dallas Turner? And we've started to see a little pushback in the betting market on Dallas Turner. So like, that's where I'm kind of hung up on. And then I always try to find little nuggets from like folks like Daniel Jeremiah or whoever. And I thought it was interesting, Ben, that Daniel Jeremiah put out a tweet that I don't know if a lot of people grabbed or understood or whatever, but he said two stocks that I would like to purchase right now was Byron Murphy, the nose tackle, defensive tackle out of Texas, and then Graham Barton, the interior offensive lineman out of Duke. So I always thought that was kind of interesting, and they pointed that out. So 8 is the one that I'm trying to be a little different and trying to think, all right, what is Atlanta going to do at 8? And I'm just kind of put down in my notes, I don't want it to be Dallas Turner.
You know, you're right. I mean, like, the fun right now in terms of like, okay, what's going to happen? What do we think is definitely in the 2 to 6 range, sure. Right? Who's going to,
where's the trade? Who's going to pick JJ McCarthy?
That's even like, is Odunze going ahead of Neighbors now? Is Harrison even the first receiver? Like, that's where I was on. You get the 7, Joe Alt, you get the 8, Dallas Turner, and everybody kind of moves on. I mean, maybe there's some Joe Alt at 5 at the Chargers stay, but by and large, like it feels like these are almost like free spaces on the bingo card, right? But you're right. Like, it's not like it automatically, we're just sort of assuming that. And the Dallas Turner one is interesting because, look, he would be the first defensive player who, you know, at that point, we're projecting 7 offensive players going first.
Which would be a record, by the way.
Yeah, but right. Okay. So it's sort of like when the year that Kenny Pickett was drafted as the first quarterback, but he went 20th. That wasn't a sign to me that, oh, Kenny Pickett's good. It's like, God, that is terrible. You're telling me that the first quarterback in a draft is going 20? That means nobody wants these guys. Because to go that late, if you're anything viable, that is not remotely good. Now, this isn't the same thing because the 8th pick for any player is pretty good. But the first defensive player, it means that Dallas Turner is not viewed as a massive difference maker. Say whatever you want about Chase Young, the way things have unfolded so far. But he was viewed,
oh yeah,
as a difference maker. That's why when he went 2 over quarterbacks, and granted Washington had Dwayne Haskins, but you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't like this massive, I mean, there were some, but it wasn't like this massive outcry for how can you not take a quarterback, because Chase Young was viewed that good. So I think to your point, it is fair to ask the question, well, what's the deal here with Dallas Turner?
And to jump in real quickly. And once again, these, I like to, you know, there's a reason that I have been so stubborn on Bo Nix not being a first round pick. That is my biggest bet of the entire draft season. And a lot of it stems back to Todd McShay going on Ryan Russillo's podcast and just kind of crushing Bo Nix from what he had heard. He's like, everyone that I talk to in the league says he's a second round pick. He's a backup quarterback. And I'm like, because Denver's so desperate because they have Jarrett Stidham and, you know, the pride of James Madison, Ben DiNucci on their roster, they just like, well, they got to pick quarterback at 12. I'm like, do they? I mean, that would be a big reach, right? So that's where my mind starts to go kind of crazy. Back to the defensive side of the things, Lance Zierlein, who I respect, and he's had a pretty good track record covering the draft with NFL.com, he tweeted out a day ago, he goes, in my opinion, the battle for the first defensive player to be drafted could be closer than you think. And I think when you see something like that, and then you see the Jeremiah tweet about, you know, Byron Murphy's stock rising, it gets the gears going. And it could be, hey, it's the final week before the draft and this is all BS. But it's also, we just kind of like sat back and we're like, all right, Joe Alt's the top O-lineman, and Dallas Turner's the best defensive player. And we're like, okay, are we sure? Like, how do we know? And that's where my mind starts to go, where I want to try to be a little different.
Yeah, I am. You know, look, there's a lot of my colleagues who can't stand the draft because it is all mostly guesswork. I mean, obviously, there's some, you know, you can be, you know, intuitive with some of the things, but it's just a lot of guesswork. And I enjoy the puzzle. I enjoy trying to figure this out. So to use this case as an example of Byron Murphy, and I, you know, just to be clear for those of you who are listening, because Tim is on, as if you're new and not listening otherwise, I am not a film breakdown guy. Tim mentioned earlier that part of the reason why some people, I already forgot the example you gave, but like some people use their own thinking when it comes to, like you said, with the betting. It doesn't matter what I think of any of these players. It's a matter of what do I think is going to happen.
Right.
And that's how I try to do these mock drafts. And because I'm not breaking down the table, I don't have, I'm not, I mean, you know, I watch football, whatever, but I'm not forming these, oh my God, I'm going to pound the table. Drake May has to go too. I don't care what anybody says. Well, okay, well, cool. Then I'll take your money if it's going to be Jaden Daniels. Now, so what I'm saying is that with Byron Murphy, right, when I first, like, I got into this, you know, really started to get into the mock after the NFL season. You know, you're trying to get lay of the land, and he was sort of somewhere in the middle of the first round from what I could see. And then, you know, when Aaron Donald retires, right? Okay, well, the best defensive tackle is just give him to the Rams at 19, makes life simpler for everybody. And that's just kind of where I left it for a while. Then I was like, well, actually, you know what? Wait a minute. The Bengals lost DJ Reader. If you know, they don't really need a tackle this year per se, so, but they need that. So if at 18 he's there, the Bengals take him. And I was like, well, you know, wait a minute. Seattle's picking at 16. Boy, they really need defensive tackles too. And then, you know, then you see another, you know, yet more defensive tackles keep getting paid huge money. Like they're getting paid, you know, John Allen is the second highest paid tackle in this league. He's making $18 million. He's like a pauper compared to these other guys. So now you're like, well, wait a minute. If the defensive tackles are getting paid this much and there's not like a ton of them in this draft, you're saving money if you pick this guy in the first round. And then you look at it a little bit more. And I know there was a report the other day that's like, well, even the Bears could possibly be looking at him at 9. I don't know what to think of that. But like, I'm screwing around last night and I just did my 800th mock draft just to try something. And I had, because I think Denver at 12 should trade down because they only have a small amount of picks. And, you know, if they do want to take a quarterback or Bo Nix, like, taking it at 12 makes no sense, right? You might as well trade down and get more stuff. So I had them trading down with Seattle going up to 12 and taking Murphy. Now, I may not do that. And it's really hard to predict trades when you're doing the mock drafts and so on. But yes, to your point, whether it's a subconscious thing about what I'm hearing out there or just trying to look at it with fresh eyes, I have had him moving up a little bit. But again, you know, you move him up now, all of a sudden I've got Quinnen and Mitchell dropping down closer to 20. And he was the guy that I thought maybe would challenge Dallas Turner a few weeks ago as the first guy. So this is an evolution. It could be an evolution of complete nonsense in my own head. But yes, I mean, I've been playing around with that one as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I've kind of gone back and forth with Brock Bowers because Brock Bowers, if you look at, you know, big boards and, you know, you look at Daniel Jeremiah, who obviously, you know, worked in the league for a number of years, Dane Brugler, your colleague at The Athletic, who is incredibly well respected for what he does with the Beast every year. I mean, Brock Bowers is a top eight prospect in pretty much everyone's eyes, but he's at a position that is not necessarily thought of to be of that much of, I don't want to say importance, but you know, value, if that makes sense. So like I've gone back and forth because Tony Pauline, who's been covering the draft for a long, long time, he had a report earlier this week that he felt like the floor for Brock Bowers was 10. But then Adam Schefter said that he felt like the range for Bowers was 10 to 16. So I go back and forth, and then you get the Peter Schrager with his history with the Jets and Joe Douglas and him having, you know, Brock Bowers going 10. So yeah, you work yourself into these kind of knots because you start to think a little outside the box. Brock Bowers to the Jets has kind of become another groupthink selection where every mock you look at has Bowers going 10. So yeah, you kind of go back and forth. You saw that the Chargers worked out Brock Bowers or had him in for a top 30 visit. I believe someone else in the top, I think the Bears had him in for a top 10 visit, which would be a little surprising considering, you know, they took, they have Cole Kmet, but, you know, I think it was either Brugler or Jeremiah who basically said, hey, you remove TE and you put, you know, offensive weapon there. And, you know, Brock Bowers isn't necessarily a bad selection at 9. So he's another one that I just kind of keep tying myself into knots when it comes to where I want to place him for the mock draft.
Well, and when you realize that, his salary as a rookie is going to be much closer to the higher end, if he's being picked around the top 10, to the higher end veteran players than compared to all these other positions. It makes the value, as you mentioned, worse. I mean, like, you know, at least the advantage of whether you're taking Jaden Daniels or the defensive tackle, whatever, the point is
wide receivers now too.
Yeah. Like you're getting a guy who you're believing is going to be a top, you know, one of the top players at their position for a remarkable discount for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years. 5 years, likely if it's the first round, the tight end doesn't do that for you. So what do you do? And as valuable as a tight end can be, well, obviously we've seen, you know, Travis Kelce right now and Gronkowski and what have you. Like, a lot of teams still just don't know quite what to do with them.
Look at Atlanta. I mean, now maybe they will with Kirk and, you know, Kirk down there in a new offensive mind. But I mean, my God, I mean, especially for fantasy football owners, they were beyond frustrated with how limited the targets were for Kyle Pitts, who they spent the fifth overall pick on just a couple years ago.
Right. No, 100%. So that's interesting. So right now, Dallas Turner, is that your answer for the first defensive player?
I think I'm going to zag. I think I'm debating. I took a little flyer from a bet standpoint. Once again, it's based off of the odds. It's not, you know, I took a flyer on Byron Murphy. Liatu Latu, the edge rusher out of UCLA, is interesting. He's been rising a lot. You know, the injury concern seems, from all reporting, seems to be pretty clear. Now, different teams might think differently of him. For those who do not know, he medically retired when he was at Washington with a neck injury. Now he's back and he should be good to go. Played at UCLA this past year. I don't think it will be a corner, but then you see a report saying that maybe a corner could go at number 8, which would be pretty high. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to zag just to be a little different. And I think I might I'll either go Murphy or Latu at number 8 to Atlanta. And Atlanta could trade out too. And that's the thing you don't know, right? Atlanta could trade out at 8 if JJ McCarthy hasn't been selected by then. You know, could a team come up? You know, could Denver, Las Vegas, Minnesota, whoever it is, Seattle, come up to 8 and grab, you know, the believed to be fourth best quarterback in this draft.
Also, I would say if one of those three top receivers is still there, because if you think, you know, a lot of the herd mentality,
Chicago,
the Bears take whichever one's left at 9, then this would be a good spot. Not saying Atlanta couldn't, but you know, they have Drake London, they signed Mooney, you know, not that they won't need it, but like they got to work on their defense. They've kind of dealt with. Plus, with receivers, you can always get one somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I talk about the mocks is, like, I think from what I've kind of picked up on, a couple people have said, you know, looking at the over-under markets for positions, 9.5 is the number for offensive linemen. I think we go over that. I think Washington could trade back in to get an offensive lineman there back end of the first round. And I think the wide receivers could slip a little bit. I think as you get back down to the, you know, there's injury concerns regarding Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. I think it almost becomes, there's been really a lot of, at least I've picked up on some questions regarding Adonai Mitchell out of Texas. I played his over the other day of 27.5. I could see him falling out of the first round. And then like a guy like Ladd McConkey, I think could slip into the first round. But I think there's a lot of wide receivers, Ben, whether it's Xavier Worthy out of Texas, McConkey out of Georgia that I mentioned, Troy Franklin out of Oregon, Keon Coleman out of Florida State, the kid from South Carolina, Xavier Leggett. It feels like there's a lot of second round guys. But after that top three of Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Adunze, it feels like there's a little bit of a drop-off. So I think we see fewer wide receivers than most years, and maybe they drop into the second round.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Usually my issue with these mock drafts is there's 32 picks, and I've got, depending on the day, 40 or so guys that I want to put into those picks. And I was like, am I leaving this out? Am I leaving that out? Whatever. I feel, to me, this year, it almost feels slightly the opposite. Mm-hmm. Like, I get to the last few picks, and I'm like, I still need three more, and I feel like I've, like, sort of, I don't know what to do. I can't just shove in all these wide receivers The reason wide receivers continually get a lot of attention is, one, that's such a strong position every year. Athletes, you know, look, these guys see these things, right? Receivers get paid, running backs don't. So if you're coming up in high school or whatever, and you're kind of either or, you're going to want to gravitate towards towards the receiver. But at the same time, I don't think building through receiver is the way to go. It's just, you know, I think going through defensive tackle makes more sense, because this is a I know sort of a crazy view. They're right next to the ball. The receivers are all the way over there, and they need the ball to get thrown to that guy. If a receiver catches six passes in a game, it feels like a lot. I'm not saying they're doing nothing else the rest of the time, but like, it's somewhat diminishing. You're not going to get as much bang for your buck play in, play out. So that's why I can't keep putting these receivers in. But then I'm like, well, I don't know. What did you say the over-under was for the offensive lineman in the first round?
9.5.
So I just did one, as I said last night. That's what one does on a Saturday night. And I'm looking at it right now. I have 10. However, to my point of like putting guys in, that I'm just like, well, I feel like I have to put somebody in because got to fill all the spots. Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon, and to an extent, Jordan Morgan, the tackle slash guard from Arizona. Like, I have them and going like in two of the last three picks. And I'm like, well, I think that makes sense from like a value perspective, a positional perspective, like what teams need offensive line. But I don't necessarily know from a talent perspective that that's the way to go when I'm leaving out, you know, like a bunch of receivers. But so I had 10, but it feels tenuous to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jordan Morgan from Arizona, he could slip into the first round. Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, another tackle, could slip into the back end of the first round. You know, Graham Barton, I mentioned him. He's kind of the versatile offensive lineman who projects more as a center. I believe Dane Brugler had him as a top center in his beast.
So I think the way I would look, I mean, I guess this is the point, but like, there's 8 I feel pretty good about, although I do wonder if there's a Tyler Guyton slide to come, but we'll see. But like, not out of the first round, but maybe just down. And if that happens, then that may push other guys down. But okay, Jordan Morgan, I typically have put in there somewhere because the Ravens, the 49ers, and the Chiefs, who hold the last 3 picks, all need offensive line. So it's reasonable to think that one of them thinks of him, whether it's as a tackle or a guard, thinks he's good enough. But after that, I don't know. The Jackson Powers Johnson center out of Oregon, who was like a big, you know, had a big year for them. You know, at the Senior Bowl, he was being talked about as maybe being like the pick for the Steelers at 20 or the Rams at 19. But now that's come back a bit, and you're starting to hear some more concerns there, maybe with some injuries. And then after that, I don't even know who I would like. It's not like there's like a receiver I could pick 12 guys that I could say. Offensive line, I don't know. The kid from BYU whose name I'm not going to be able to get, Kingsley, what's his last name?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine.
Okay, sorry, no disrespect intended. I just don't want to butcher. Like, he was a guy, like, I've even seen
Sui Matia.
I don't know. Yeah. Great. It might have been Schrager or somebody else, but people have had him as, like, the 32nd pick. But I don't know. I've had some people tell me that they are not fans at all. And I was and then even just over the last couple of days, you know, I was talking to somebody about their individual board. This is somebody, we'll say a league source per se. Mm-hmm. They've got him in the third. Mm. On the flip side, a guy like Roger Rosengarten, who I've been having mocked to the Commanders with one of their 2 second round picks of late. But that's even a rise from where he's been typically mentioned. Is there enough to get him into the first round? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my prediction right now, to bring it back to Washington, is when you look at what they have from a draft perspective, right, with the high twos, 3 threes, and another fifth, I think they can kind of cheaply get into the back end of the first round and grab a tackle. And, you know, it's funny. I'm curious from the people that you've talked to, Ben, from around the league. I feel like you got to get a quarterback at the end of the first round so you get the fifth year option. I think that is such a load of crap nowadays. And you look at Justin Fields, and this is just me speaking, I think his value was diminished because of that fifth year option. I mean, you had a decision to make. You got to pay him a lot of money. But for a tackle, if you're able to have them on a rookie scale for 5 years, I think that's more, appealing. So I could see Washington as a team that definitely needs a left tackle, is going to draft a quarterback at two. Do they go up? I don't know who that tackle would be, but that's why when it comes down to it, I think there's going to be 10 offensive linemen selected, because I think a team like San Francisco or Kansas City, who, you know, conventional wisdom thinks they're going to get a pass catcher, do they need to get him at 31 or 32? Or could they get a really good pass catcher at 36, where Washington is selecting, and allow Washington to jump in and grab one of the offensive linemen? So that's kind of been my mindset lately, is like, I don't know if it'll be Jordan Morgan or, you know, the kid from Houston, was Patrick Paul. Mm-hmm. I feel like there will be an offensive lineman selected with one of the last couple picks of the first round, and therefore, get over that number. If you're looking at Dane Brugler's big board, which was part of his beast, I mean, in his top 27, he's got 6 offensive tackles. So, you know, kind of goes to show you where, you know, where that stands. And sometimes too, looking at some of those big boards, whether it be Jeremiah or Brugler or whoever, I guess McShay's not doing it because he's not covering the draft this year for ESPN. But some of those guys, their big boards are not spot on, but you know, Daniel Jeremiah worked in the league. I think Lance Zierlein, if I'm not mistaken, I think he worked in the league. So, their boards are kind of similar to what you'll probably see from folks from around the league.
Now, let's say that's the case. So Daniel Jeremiah, as these guys do, did a conference call the other day with reporters. I wasn't in it, but saw the transcript of it. And when it came to the topic of exactly what we're discussing, it was more about tackles specifically in the beginning of the second round, but you know, it kind of means the end of the first two. He said, the early half of the second round is a quote, bit of a no man's land, end quote, this year. That is how I have felt as somebody who's been doing these mock drafts. I can't stand the Commanders pick at 36 based on what it is that I think they need and what's there and what the perception is of the talents there. So I think that's the issue, is like, are there enough guys that ultimately people think are good enough, or are people just going to reach because got to do something, got a hole at our tackle here. We don't want our swing tackle starting or whatever. Here's my thing, Tim. I don't know. I may be in the minority, but I the more I think about this, the more this is more of a me thing. So I'm going against my usual bit of not interjecting my own thoughts. But since Adam Peters isn't talking, I got to do something. I think the play at 36 is to trade down. I was thinking about this the other day. I get it that like Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton, who are typically at the end of the top group of tackles, they're the two who are typically at the end who may end up in the 20s. Mims has played a grand total of 8 games at Alabama, and Guyton started 15 at Oklahoma. Like, we're saying that J.J. McCarthy's inexperienced and he has 28 starts or whatever, right? These guys don't even have close to that. Are we really saying that the plan for Washington is they draft whichever quarterback, we'll just say Jaden Daniels for argument's sake, they draft Jaden Daniels, excuse me, and the plan to protect him is with a guy that has not started much, that if you read every single evaluation, whether it's from Brugler or Daniel Jeremiah or others about Tyler Guyton, they all talk about how he's pretty raw, inexperienced, may need time. Is that really the plan? So my thinking is, I get that they're good, but you know who's going to be good at tackle perceived also? Whoever's in the first round next year. And at that point, you're not going to have to pay, you know, they're going to be picking somewhere. So you can go deal with it then. Plus, I always like having more picks. Like, I try to find a way to have more picks every year. So every year when I see an opportunity to move up and make a play, I can do it. So I'm not saying that they couldn't move up. I'm just saying if the idea is that tackle is then going to start to protect Jaden Daniels, I find that hard to believe that would be the thinking for anyone. So I'm of the thinking they trade down, get, I don't know, you know, I mean, if they're picking at 36, you know, is Michael Penix or Bo Nix still on the board? Does the team want to move up for them? You know, whatever, who's the thing that's left? One of these wide receivers.
I think that's the interesting thing, right? So let's look at the second round. You've got Carolina, at 33. They don't need a quarterback. You can make your joke, but they don't need a quarterback right now. New England more than likely is going to be selecting a quarterback at 3. Arizona doesn't need a quarterback. So you're thinking, as you look back a little bit, all right, where are quarterback needy teams? And yeah, I mean, my belief is that Bo Nix will be available when Washington comes around. Denver doesn't have a second round pick this year. At what point does Denver, if they pass on a quarterback at 12, which I highly believe they will do, maybe they trade down. But yeah, I think Washington, there's a multitude of options for Washington, which is great. And they could, if they, you know, Montez Sweat style and what was that, 2019, go get, a guy that they graded as a first round talent in the back end of the first round, or you wait and you've got 40, and you could certainly pick up a pretty good piece there. And maybe you pick up Denver's third and a future second, and believe that Denver's not going to be very good next year. So that could be a really high second in 2025.
Yeah. And again, let's just say they even traded that pick purely for a future pick. They still have 8 picks. They still have a second, 4 picks later. They still have 3 threes. It's not like they're like bereft, like you're trading away one of your only assets. They have.
Hey, you pick 4 picks later.
Right. Also, and the way this whole offseason has been, I don't think they're trying to quote unquote win this year. Yes, they'll go out and play and they'll do the best they can. But like they went out and signed a bunch of dudes to 1-year deals. They didn't sign anybody to like some, oh my God, kind of a contract. So that's why to me, it feels like they're playing the long game logically as they should. And therefore trading up, I get it. But if it's to trade up for this guy to block for the new quarterback, that seems odd to me, but we'll see how that goes. Tell me this. What's the markets doing about Michael Penix? Mm. Because I think this one is interesting to me, and I'll explain why. But what do you got for Penix?
Yeah, Penix is really interesting. So his over-under is 32.5. So essentially, will he or will he not be a first-round pick? And the juice, right, what you pay for that bet has shifted a lot. As we sit here on this Sunday afternoon, I believe it's minus 190 to the under. So minus 190 that he will be a first round pick. Look, I'm a bit stubborn here. Now, I don't have any bets on or against Michael Penix. My position continues to be Bo Nix will not be a first round pick. So if he goes in the first round, that would be pretty unfortunate for my bankroll. But the Penix one's interesting because I mentioned that I had Jay Gruden on the show on Friday, and he loves Michael Penix. And it was Albert Breer who went on with, I think it was Rich Eisen, maybe a week or two ago. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, scouts and front offices are skeptical about Michael Penix, but coaches love Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback out of Washington. There's apparently intrigue from Las Vegas at 13. I doubt they pick him at 13. Could they trade back in? That's certainly possible. But I, if you ask me today, am I going to put Michael Penix in my first round of my mock? No. Am I being a bit stubborn? Probably. The reason I bring that up, Ben, is my partner on VSiN, Jonathan Von Tobel, has tracked the over-under on quarterbacks since draft betting has become a thing. So for the last 7 years, it has gone under the market's total of quarterbacks 6 of those 7 years, and the market is sitting this at 4.5. So if you assume that Caleb, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy are all first-round picks, which I do assume that will happen, it basically comes down to Penix and or Nix if one of them gets into the first round. But the betting market right now believes that Penix will go in the first round. There's some strong opinions out there that that's going to happen. There's quarterback needy teams, but this is where I'm just being a little stubborn. I really don't believe Bo Nix will go in the first. Penix, this is more of just kind of a gut feel of, we did this with Will Levis last year and he fell out of the first round. We did this with Malik Willis. He went to the third round. Hendon Hooker went to the third round. These were guys that this week kind of we were all buying into. They're going to be first round picks, and they did not ultimately go in the first round. So I don't have any inside information on Penix. Will he or will he not? But I found it interesting, the Albert Breer take of, you know, scouts don't necessarily like him as much as head coaches. And we know at the end of the day, who's making the decisions more often than not, it's the front office.
Yeah, no, I look, all that makes a complete ton of sense. And I've been skeptical about Penix. You know, every time I talk about the age at 24, it's like, oh God, you know, I'm 100. I mean, you know, let me get back to 24. But, you know, he's had the injuries. Maybe it's the lefty thing. It always looks slightly unorthodox. But look, he was successful. That's that national championship semifinal game.
Oh, he was amazing.
He was lights out. I went to the Washington Utah game earlier that year, and I thought he was a little more erratic with his throwing. And then in the national title game, obviously against a, you know, a really good Michigan team, he didn't look so hot. But I, in doing these various stories, you know, I did one the other day. I know you saw where I interviewed 17 different people around the league. And he came in fifth. I'm not, you know, and it wasn't that close to third and fourth, but the people who liked him really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people I've talked to, again, it's the same thing, it's the same percentage. It's like nobody's viewing him in this top echelon, and yet there's some that really like him. And then the Commanders do their bit last week with they bring in the quarterbacks. Okay, if I had said they were going to do this, you would say, sure, May and McCarthy. But they also brought in Penix. Now, I don't
that was
Penix,
weird.
Penix is not remotely in the number two pick, and I guess you could argue, hey, maybe Washington is double-checking just in case, even though Adam Peters said the other day, yeah, we're good at two. You know, somebody comes and says, well, you know, we'll give the Raiders say we'll give you three number ones and Devontae Adams or whatever. You know, oh, okay. So maybe they're doing due diligence. But the fact that they brought him in says to me that reading the tea leaves says to me they like him. You don't, you're not wasting your time on a guy, even if you have all these opportunities to bring in people. You're not wasting your time on a guy you don't think is any good. So if they think he's good, again, doesn't mean he's good in the first round, but they like him enough to bring him in. And, these other people are telling me this, I'm kind of starting to think that this is maybe more than just spin. And then on top of that, you know, if we said he's going to be in the first round, the typical notion is the Raiders trade somewhere back into the end of the first round to take him. If you like him, why don't you just take him at 13 and call it a day? Because I mean, if you're trading back into the first round, now you're giving up other assets. So you're basically saying, do I want to take Terrion Arnold, J.C. Latham, whatever, or do I take the quarterback? Now, I'm not there yet, but I did put him in my mock draft yesterday just to see how it would go. I just wanted to get a look. It's kind of interesting. It's too early,
yeah,
but that's not the point. The point is he's there at 13, and if Denver passes at 12, What I mean, are you sure Denver's not going to do something? I mean, other teams might want, you know, there's the teams who maybe want the younger quarterback, you know, the Rams or somebody else. So Seattle, yeah.
By the way,
Seattle's offensive coordinator, obviously.
Yeah.
Ryan Grubb. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Penix one is fascinating to me because, you know, I keep harping on that. I don't think Bo Nix will be a first round. So have a good yuck when he, you know, gets selected 28th on Thursday. I look like an idiot, but you know, the one that is interesting, and I go back to Todd McShay, who I think, you know, is pretty well respected. He said that Penix is the most polarizing prospect because there's so many differing opinions on Michael Penix. So could I see Antonio Pierce and that front office falling in love for him and saying, you know what, let's just take him at 13. Sure. I certainly could see that, but they have the 44th pick, you know, do they have to use what should be an immediate starter at 13 there? So I fully admit this is where I'm being a bit stubborn and I kind of just am going to keep him out of the first round unless I hear something otherwise, just because the mark, you know, we talk about quarterbacks so much, but yeah, the Penix one is the one. I was actually going to bet Penix to go ahead of Nix. They had a matchup at DraftKings, and that market got bet very quickly. Opened as Penix as a -150 favorite. Right now, I look at it, it's -235 Penix getting drafted ahead of Bo Nix. So I think there's a lot of belief from bettors out there that Penix and everything that's been reported will certainly go ahead of Bo Nix. And, you know, I think that article, PFT put out an article saying that Bo Nix of the six quarterbacks is the one that fall you know, I don't know. This maybe is a hot take, but I was just kind of kicking around today. I'm like, are we so sure that Nix is going to go ahead of like Spencer Rattler? Like, I think he will, but I just, Bo Nix, from the people that I've talked to, just, you know, he's precise. A lot of his passes were, you know, under, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, or, you know, I'll give you a quick example. I've used this a bunch and I'll leave the names out of it. But Ben, I worked in minor league baseball for a while. And, you know, you talk to players and, you know, you'd hear about some of the up and coming, you know, prospects. Like, you know, I saw Manny Machado at 19 and like, it was like, oh my God, this dude is going to be a freaking superstar. And lo and behold, he was. But there was a first round pick in the O's organization. And I asked a question to someone. I'm like, oh, well, what do we think about him? And he's like, oh, what a great dude. I'm like, oh no. Like, you know, it's not like Cannon, bazooka. It's like awesome. And that's kind of what I grabbed for Bo Nix. Like everything you read about him is like coach's son. You know, he's going to be in the first one in, last one out. I'm like, yeah, but is he good? Does he have like a massive arm that you can trust? So that's why I've kind of continued to sit back on. I think Bo Nix is probably going to be in the league for 15 years, but is he going to be a first round pick? I don't think so. I don't think coaches want to spend a first round pick on him. So I know I veered off a little bit, but yeah, the Penix one, I think I wouldn't be surprised either way. I wouldn't be surprised if he went 13 to the Raiders, and I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't get drafted on Thursday night.
Just to put a one last thought on the Bo Nix thing, and I'm rooting for your money. So if you want an under 4.5, let's go under 4.5. The one thing I think about with Bo Nix is, it's, you know, Kyle Shanahan has obviously done a great job with randoms at quarterback, including the guy that was literally picked last in the first round. But it's not that they're, you know, they had to start Brock Purdy out of circumstance, but they were pretty excited, if almost felt like borderline arrogant about the way they were all discussing it. And then we see why that Brock Purdy can get the job done, because I think Kyle Shanahan thinks he can basically do this with almost anybody. Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of think Sean Payton does too. He may even think it more. And, you know, Denver's, I mean, it's really stunning. I know that they like Jared Stidham, like in a general way, but you can't, you know, it would be one thing if it was Jared Stidham and like, you know, somebody they took in the second round a year ago, even just, but like Jared Stidham and Danucci, that can't work. And Sean Payton didn't go into his second year. If he doesn't do the quarterback now, then he's going to wait another year.
But my only thought about that is, okay, Denver really likes him. But if you're the only team that is, I don't know this to be true, but I'm just using it as an example. If you're the only team that would be willing to draft him in the first round, then you're not going to draft him in the first round, right? So I think Denver, they're the favorite to select Bo Nix. But, you know, I think ultimately when you're doing these, you got to get a little, like I've said with Penix, I'm more stubborn than anything. I just think Sean Payton's smart enough. But I also think Sean Payton, who's entering year two of a contract that's paying him like $18 million a year, yeah, he could say, screw it, I'm picking Nix at 12. Or he could say, screw it, I'm going to wait and see where he lands. And then there's also the thought of, you know, Tony Pauline put out the article the other day that said they're going to be aggressive to get up to the top five and try to get one of those quarterbacks. So I don't know what the hell Denver's going to do. They don't have enough ammo,
right?
They have no second round pick.
I also don't think they have enough ammo to even trade back to the bottom of the first. I mean, cause in order for them to do that, they don't have a second round pick next year. Are they going to trade a first round pick next year to get Bo Nix? That's only just making the expense worse. I mean, I think the move for them is what I did, trade down. And then, sorry for Tim's money, then take Bo Nix, because then you're getting more assets. You're rolling the dice, but at least you're sort of lessening the cost a little bit by getting whatever else you're going to get back in these trades. So that to me would make sense. Picking with 12 doesn't make sense. Trying to move up. I mean, look, I guess we're only talking about picks. If somehow they say to some team, hey, we'll give you Courtland Sutton and these picks, Courtland Sutton. Well, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just making that up. Or Patrick Surtain. Okay, well, then maybe that's a different deal. But if we're just talking picks, they don't have enough. All right. We can move off of that, and we can even, if you need to run, because I've already kept you longer than we were discussing. But was there anything else in the first round? Or we could, you and I can talk mock draft offline.
Yeah.
Was there anything else?
No, I think you know, the Latu Rise, Byron Murphy, I think rises, offensive lineman. The last one that I've kind of penciled in of dropping was Adonai Mitchell, the wide receiver out of Georgia, or Texas, who started at Georgia, finished at Texas. You know, there's just a lot of kind of, there was the diabetes thing that was mentioned. You know,
I missed that. Is he diagnosed with it?
Yeah. There's something out there that he is diabetic. It was in that, it was on the Substack, from that old, the guy who had the C2 report last year about CJ Stroud, who Bob McGinn, I think, was the one who unearthed the,
and he's the, and he's the one who talks to every scout every year. He puts out that he used to work for The Athletic, every year puts out this really detailed report from out, he's up in Green Bay, or he was up in Green Bay, or maybe he still is. He, you know, sort of almost like pre-internet, but like pre the last several years, was like sort of the Bible of like, hey, here's what people are really saying about these players. So you take what he's saying. He's not just a rando. But anyway, so possibly,
yeah,
somebody
so,
told
so,
him this.
So he said, you know, that he, one of the people he talked to said that Adonai Mitchell is uncoachable, almost uncoachable, and his issue is his blood sugar. That's what a scout told Bob McGinn. So I think he could drop out of the first round. We've seen his over-under move a lot. You know, I bet a little over 27.5. Could he land at Buffalo at 28? I think that's possible. But I think Adonai Mitchell's a guy that I might keep out of the first round. Brian Thomas from LSU continues to drop a little bit. He's got, I think, some injury concerns. So those are the ones. And then I'm debating whether or not to put Ladd McConkey in the first round. You know, 3-1 was his odds, Ben, to go in the first round a couple weeks ago. Those have dropped pretty significantly. And I just wonder if a team like San Francisco or Kansas City just says, you know what, screw it. This is an elite route runner. We know he'll come in and make a ton of big catches right away. We don't have to worry about anything. Let's just plug him in. So I do wonder if I'm going to have Ladd McConkey, the wide receiver out of Georgia, in my first round.
One for me, just out of curiosity, since do you follow these things? What's the deal with Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois? I ask this because, like, the price of defensive tackles keeps going up. He's probably the number two in this class after Byron Murphy, who we discussed. I don't know. For some reason, I'm not completely positive he's going to be in the first yet. When I'm looking at my list and I'm telling you, I'm kind of struggling here with the last few picks. It's like, well, why then wouldn't I put this guy in that a lot of other people are projecting? So what's been the line with the action for him?
So the one thing that was fascinating about Newton, out of Illinois, was that Circa opened him at like 18.5. And I had one person tell me who follows the draft very closely, not a scout, just a bettor, said that was a generationally terrible line. I was like, oh, wow. I was not able to grab it in time. So it has moved probably back to where it's supposed to be. But then I heard McShay kind of give a breakdown of Newton on Russillo's podcast, and he loved him. I mean, he really was fascinated by him. So, yeah, I wasn't necessarily planning on having him in my first round, but I think the mocks that you see from people that I kind of trust and respect, they're slipping them in there. I'm looking at, you know, kind of an aggregate right now of mock drafts at this point in time with Newton.
Well, he's Dane Brugler's number 28 prospect. So just, you know, in terms of that, he would be in the first.
Yeah. And I'm looking at Walter Football, put him at 31. I see as high as Eddie Brown from the San Diego Tribune, put him at 21. I think that's a little rich. Brugler in his most recent mock, late last week was 31. So yeah, I could see it. I certainly could see it. A buddy of mine, who I believe had one of the better mock drafts a year ago, courtesy of the Huddle Report, John Daigle, for 4 for 4, he had him at 21, which once again, is a little rich. He's over at Establish the Run. So yeah, I mean, I think he could be one where he got a lot of buzz in my world because the number initially set on him was way too low at 18 and a half. But I think he could definitely be a first round pick, especially as you alluded to, where it's like, who are the defensive tackles? It's, you know, Byron Murphy. It's, you know, Verse is more of an edge guy, right? You know, I think from a,
there was the kid, Sweat, who got into some trouble a couple weeks ago.
I'm forgetting who that was. Yeah,
he was another defensive tackle, and like, you know, he had some. I don't want to say what it was because I may have it wrong, but he got pulled over or something, and I don't even know where it's happening because that's the one position I'm not caring about. This team is defensive tackle. But he was like the only other guy that was getting like any kind of first round.
Braden Fisk is getting a lot of run. But I don't know if he's a first round, maybe a second rounder. But I think he's really excelled in a lot of, I think he went to the Senior Bowl, did well, tested well. I think he's got short arms. He's got a pretty short wingspan. I'm looking at it right now. He's been rising, but I don't think a first round pick. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Johnny Newton. I haven't finished my mock yet. I at the end of the day, I certainly could put him in there as a possibility because I'll say this too, and you let your listeners know, and you've been doing the mock drafts more than I have. But at some point, you know, if we're in a competition, you just want the players in there. So you're like, I don't care. If Kansas City doesn't need a nose tackle or defensive tackle, we don't think he'll go there, but we just want him in the first round because we think he's going to be a first round pick. I did that last year. I actually ended up, it's funny because last year, thinking back, Ben, and I think you probably had it too. I think a lot of people nailed Emmanuel Forbes to Washington. That kind of came out like this is going to happen.
I mean, I certainly heard about it late. Late meaning before the draft. I wasn't the only one for sure. But yeah, there's a lot of names here at the end. You mentioned Mitchell, Morgan, Powers Johnson, McConkey, Xavier Worthy, the kid that ran the fastest combine, 40 times the combine. Mentioned Newton. I know you love Schrager. I'm just kidding. He had Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia. Some people have Darius Robinson, the defensive end slash tackle from Missouri. Keon Coleman, I don't know. It feels like he's been kind of cold, but at the same point, from a talent perspective, he's, you know, worthy of that discussion. Enos Rakestraw, Tyler Leggett. Like, there's definitely a bunch of guys who are sort of, you know, in that range. But again, I don't know that I'm like, oh, I've got to get that guy in there. And that's where I'm struggling.
No doubt. I mean, and then I think, you know, Cooper DeJean, the corner out of Iowa, he'll be a first round pick, but, you know, he tested really well, I believe. So he could be a guy that maybe goes higher than normal. Kool-Aid McKinstry, you know, where are you on Kool-Aid McKinstry, the corner out of Alabama? Because a year ago, he was the guy, and now at best, he's going to be the third corner selected in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I've got him somewhere, depending on what I'm thinking, you know, somewhere in the 25 to 32 range. He's one of those guys that I probably would say makes the first, but he's typically been my fourth corner after, in some order, Mitchell, Arnold, and Wiggins. So, you know, if the exercise I keep doing keeps pushing corners down, well, you know, then all of a sudden maybe he's in trouble. But the good thing with positions like that, with the main core positions, almost every team at all times needs a quarterback, an offensive lineman, a pass rusher. So if the talent's there, he'll probably get picked. So I would imagine he'll be in the first for me.
And then the last thing is, as I circle back up top, is obviously I think it will be quarterback. Does Arizona trade out? It's so hard to predict trades. It almost seems like it's been talked about too much. So Marvin Harrison, let's for argument's sake pencil him in there. If J.J. McCarthy's still available at 5, that would be a prime spot for the Chargers, who need a lot, to trade out. But what if the Chargers don't get what they want? And you've got Jim Harbaugh, who wants to, you know, emphasize power running and we'll kick your ass type of mentality. Could you see Joe Alt if the Chargers don't trade out? I want to end with this. This is our little exercise. If the Chargers don't trade out, Ben, what would you do at 5? Because I think every mock that I read is Chargers out and JJ McCarthy goes to Minnesota, to wherever. But what if the Chargers don't trade out? What if Minnesota's like, nah, you're not going to pick a quarterback there? Well, wait. You know, we don't need to get ahead of the Giants. We believe that the Giants aren't going to pick JJ McCarthy, even though they've been poking around at quarterback. So what would you do if the Chargers did not trade out? I would go Joe Alt. And that's why I took a little flyer on Alt to go five at like plus 475, just because I think if they stay there and Harrison's gone, I could just see them saying, you know what? Let's just start building a badass offensive line for Justin Herbert.
So, you know, we talked earlier about trying not to put your own thought into the exercise. Okay, but at some point, you know, you're the one thinking about this. And I, you know, so like, I think the Chargers, I get what you're saying here. What if they don't? I think that they should, in part because if they're
going to. Oh, I agree. They should. They should. I'm saying, and they might.
But in part because of what you're saying, that there is this notion that Harbaugh, you know, wants to sort of build the mentality of this team starting with the line. The thing is, though, I mean, unless they think Joe Alt is Joe Jacoby and everybody else on the tackle list is, you know, George Stark. I don't know why I just nailed George Stark for no reason. But anyway, my point is, if it's a really, really good one versus everybody else is like a below, then take Alt. But if it's not graded that much different, you can trade almost anywhere into the picks down to 18, right? And still be in a pretty good chance you're going to get a tackle. Versus if you take receiver at five, even if everybody says Odunze or Neighbors is the better player, now go look at the second round. We just discussed the fall off at tackle, from what we can tell, seems pretty steep. But receiver, again, different types of receiver, but you would still be able to get some combination of Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, Pearsall, Roman Wilson, Harbaugh's guy from Michigan. Like, there's options there. The options are much thinner the other way. So I would think, off that sense, take Alt and then pick whichever receiver's there and they pick high in the second, or they have the fifth pick they pick right after the Commanders in the second round.
These are the types of things that I look for when I'm betting this market. And I almost put in a bet on Joe Alt under 7.5. like a week or two ago, and the juice has moved considerably, and he should go top seven because Tennessee is believed to be the selection there for him. But I go back to someone just kind of got in my ear saying, you know, there's a rumor out there that maybe Joe Alt isn't that superior to the other offensive linemen. And then Lance Zierlein tweeted out this. He goes, in my opinion, I would consider moving back if I were Tennessee. There's a good chance you can add another second round pick and still grab a very good starting tackle with a reasonable move back. I don't think Alt is far superior to the others, as some think. And I've kind of heard that too. I don't know what you've heard, but I've heard that there's not a steep drop off from Joe Alt to Fatanu, the tackle out of Washington, and Fuaga out of Oregon State. Like, I don't break down tape. I couldn't tell you. I know Joe Alt's good because I watch Notre Dame, but like, I don't know if he's better than Fuaga or Fatanu or, you know, JC Latham or whatever, or Olu Fashanu. So I do wonder, that's another one of those things, Ben, that groupthink of, we talked about Dallas Turner, right? And now are we getting pushed back there? Is there any belief that, you know, Joe Alt isn't, he's the best, but is he that much better than all the other guys that you have to take him there at, you know, whatever? So that's where my mind is just kind of going in crazy circles. And by the way, I have no idea if this was entertaining to your audience, but I appreciate you letting me talk to you about it.
No, it was good. I've talked about what's going to happen at two for so long. I think we're all tired of it. So this is a good way to talk about the draft, and not being just completely, you know, talking about it through gambling. You know, be careful with your gambling. But, you know, all that good stuff. All right, Tim, what do we need to know? I mentioned your show at the top, but tell everybody else where they can find you or what else you got going on this week.
Yeah, VSiN Primetime, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on YouTube TV. You can stream us for free on our app. We are on in D.C., the 11:90 a.m. There in D.C., my show is. So if you want to hear me on a regular basis there, and you could also stream the show for free, Ben, on YouTube. So you know, a lot of different ways. And then at some point this week, I will have to put fingers to the keyboard and put together a mock draft that I'm sure will go incredibly wrong. And feel free to tweet me at one Tim Murray when Bo Nix goes 12 to the Denver Broncos and call me a moron.
Well, don't do that, but you know, you can snicker a little bit. All right. Tim, appreciate it, man. We will talk soon. Good luck with all the wagering and stay out of the first round, Bo Nix.
No Bo Nix first round.
All right. Big thanks to Tim Murray for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. Definitely appreciate all the love and support out there for our little engine that could hear, as well as my work on The Athletic. Let's see if we can finish strong, and we'll see what the Commanders do here just in a short amount of time. That is it for now, though. Ben Stantic signing off. Until next time. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.